Now the other remaining situation and circumstances we found there were actually very inviting. The Ahr Valley is a very romantic and beautiful area where some, well, I would say the best German wet wine are made from the grapes which grow there on the steep slope on both sides of the Ahr Valley. So with this finding, we returned quite satisfied to Tenemann and made our recommendation to Spurling and Dr. von Braun, and everybody agreed that this was the place to go. In the second half of the month of September, we got the green light to go ahead. I put immediately a team together of about 30 engineers, technicians, and a few administrative and clerical people. Everybody packed their personal belongings, and we put the most important equipment together and a few supplies we had in the meantime gathered. About half dozen of our special vehicles and started to move during the last days of September to the Ahr Valley to open up our highly classified operation, which received the code name Lager Reichstag. It translated means people grape wine. Dr. Steinup and I had returned in between time we visited there and now our actual move to discuss the necessary construction work which had to be made in the tunnel with a major construction contractor. Plans for the conversion was laid out in just a very few days. The tunnel bays would be constructed like a surface road, and walls and a ceiling would be coated with a gunite process with a 1 to 2 inch thick layer of concrete, which hopefully would seal the walls against the penetrating moisture and prevent any major water seepage. This was not the case, so we decided to separate the upper part of the tunnel by installing a false ceiling. This ceiling would serve as the huge air duct through which fresh air supplies could be into the tunnel. At the same time, the duct would serve also as a huge trough to collect the seepage water from the ceiling. The entrance of the main conduction tunnel was protected by almost an 8 feet thick hydraulic operated concrete door, which would prevent any place damage inside of the tunnel into the event a large bomb would be dropped in front of the entrance. An emergency personnel door was provided in the event of damage of the main door's sliding mechanism, so they could always get out if the door was not in operation condition anymore. A telephone exchange with hotlines for direct access to Peenemünde, and government agencies at Perling, and a number of military installations was to be housed in the tunnel. This way, the communication center was very well protected, because this was necessary to protect our vital interfaces, because we really could not stand any further interruptions in order to make our schedule. Now, when our small 30-man team arrived to set up offices in the winemaker school, we faced our first major obstacle. All office equipment, furniture, had been consumed at Peenemünde by the flames during the night of the air raid. We came with empty hands and needed a quick solution. I sent out some of my most effective fellows to make some contact with the local people to work out some arrangements to borrow some furniture and equipment. One of the guys made a lucky discovery that they found a big warehouse filled with everything we just needed. It was situated just a few kilometers away from our new headquarters. The furniture and the office equipment, which was stored there, belonged to the chemical and pharmaceutical company Bayer in Leverkusen. Now, this was just fine with us. And it was really our big opportunity here we run into. And being still a very young man, uninhibited and eager, I didn't hesitate to take action. I sent two trucks with Drew to the Bayer warehouse. They told the surprise guard they had orders from Berlin to pick up everything we needed, which was needed for our highly classified operation. So the guard really didn't object and let the guys take everything they picked out on the truck. When we were ready the next morning, I had my surprise, and really I shouldn't have been surprised. Three company lorries arrived from Bayer and demanded for me to explain my actions. a told me that the company also had orders from Department of Petroleum to store things for emergency use. After much argumentation, we settled on a compromise. I promised to return every piece within 3 to 4 weeks' time with not having any idea how to do it. After they had left, I called immediately the cognizant military district commander about my commitment and ask the slightly perplexed officer to do his utmost to obtain replacements for everything I had just borrowed. And I have to say he performed and I kept my promise and returned every piece we had picked up. In the first days of October, we started to set up our vehicle up, installation operation in a smaller tunnel first on a temporary basis, so we would lose as little time as possible. At the same time, we had to vacate the main tunnel and get it ready for the arrival of hundreds of retiring construction workers that were scheduled to show up within a few days. We negotiated shortly with the Spaniard who had leased the tunnel to grow his mushrooms. And I remember that the government had to pay him a very sizable amount of money. I think it was about 200,000 marks to compensate him for the loss of his business. And we supplied for a week the whole valley's population with a the finest mushrooms there are. And during the war, this was a very special delicatessen, and a real treat for the people. So they really enjoyed this. The next problem arose. We needed power and light for the construction to commence. We organized using the same tactics that we had successfully applied to get hold of the office furniture. A huge transformer that would also later provide permanent power for the operation from a nearby electric power distribution company. This required finally some additional high-level support to settle this requisition. Because certainly transformers were hard to get at this time. For internal illumination of the tunnels, we came up with a rather novel idea. I called the mayor of the city of Fort Niner on the telephone and told him I needed his street light. For a while, the mayor was startled, but he finally conceded to my argument and agreed that as long as he had knightly placards, the town had really no need for streetlights. He accepted my word that you were performing highly critical and classified development work, and he agreed to the dismantling of enough streetlights to satisfy our requirements. After I had the lights laid on with current, I met the mayor personally, and when I introduced myself, he was more than surprised to see a rather young fellow standing in front of him, and he said, "You spoke with a very low voice and such determination and authority," he said, "that I really expected to see a quite senior man, maybe a full bear growing face, you know, in front of me." In about less than 40 hours, the initial preparation was done, and construction really commenced almost immediately. The buildup of the construction workers' crew was quite rapid, and by the beginning of the month of November, we had a total of 1,800 men on site. The place really looked like a beehive. The work in the tunnel progressed with tremendous speed, and we made every milestone we had planned. In the open area between the tunnel, we set up barracks, which were all made from prefabricated premise concrete slabs to house the consistently growing workforce. Our manpower of engineers and technicians came exclusively from the military. We prepared our acquisition list for the various technical skills which we needed, and within about 2 weeks' time, the first people from the front arrived. There were called back from their military assignment, were actually put in civilian clothes, so still to protect the whole operation as much as we could, not to at least arouse any suspicion. Many of those people came directly from the battlefront, and we got all the skills we had requested. and who are quite happy that there was really no delay by the military to provide those talents to us. By the end of December, the main town facility was ready for operation. We moved from the second tunnel, which served as a temporary site for our operation. And the now ready facility. And at this time, our production manpower had increased to about 300. And our production rate was reached already about 50% of its target. By the end of February 44, this was a total of about 5 months after the arrival of my small nucleus team of 30 people, we had 600 people working and reached our full production output. When this goal was reached, we brought in a private concern which took over. After a short negotiation period, a small management team arrived and we started to transfer the whole operation to the company, which continued the operation until the end of the war, the close came down. I left with some of the men from the original 30-man team and went back to Peenemünde to take over a new assignment. The assignment was at Lubmin,